grateful always, too, for your fluidity when we're, you know, playing around with the order of things a little bit and do some things right on time and do the other things not right on time. But you guys are being very flexible. It's great. It's great. So I grew up in a military family. It was a pretty typical story of moving every 2 or 3 years, sometimes more often than not, or more often than that. But even in 2 years, a family of six can collect a fair amount of stuff. So inevitably, when we moved, we were leaving things behind. It's what happens when you move and when you make changes in your life, go from one place to another. The tricky part can be figuring out whether or not you've left something behind that you would rather have kept. And sometimes you don't discover that until it's already gone. So our task today is twofold. I want to pick up on the challenge I mentioned last week to consider what our tradition, what Unitarian Universalism has, to a certain extent, left behind in our moving forward. I also want to talk about holding on to the value of the bone we already have in our possession. Recall the line from our Kenneth Patton reading, "Let us not, like the dog in the fable, lose the bone we hold in our mouth while snapping for a bigger bone that we see reflected in the waters of our daydreaming." Keeping that bone can be the motivator of our choices. So now let's see if I can make these two things clear. I'm wondering how many of you come from the Catholic tradition. Okay, a fair number. You then are familiar with the concept of confession and priestly pardon, right? Before one accepts communion, ostensibly, one should have confessed one's sins, been forgiven, and perhaps walk away with some penance to perform. And how many of you come from Protestant traditions? So an equally large number. Perhaps you are familiar with the general confession or some similar prayer that is spoken together during worship as an opportunity to communicate more directly to God that you've made some mistakes recently. In the Episcopal Church, where I grew up, it's something like, "We have left undone those things which we ought to have done, and we have done those things which we ought not to have done." In previous eras, that line was completed by the words, "And there is no health in us." Ouch. More contemporary Episcopalian tradition has set that line aside. But I suspect, not unlike some lines that may have come from the Catholic tradition as well, there are those lines that make us feel somehow that the assumption is not good about us. If your background includes Jewish practice, how many of there are among us? A few. You may know that the high holy days that begin this coming week with Rosh Hashanah are all about celebrating the new year, knowing that the book of life will be open during the days of repentance, and that by the time Yom Kippur arrives, the holiest day, God will be deciding whether your atonements have been sufficient to keep you in the book of life for another year. Are there any of you who have come from the Islamic tradition, perhaps? In Islam, an essential part of worship is seeking forgiveness from Allah and looking for ways to make amends for one's mistakes. In Buddhist practice, anybody? A few? Apology and forgiveness are essential to one's ability to follow the path, guided by conscience and the desire to do no harm to self or others. I could go on. There are many religious traditions to explore. The point is that every religious tradition acknowledges human frailty, human capacity for wrongdoing, integrating the need for acknowledgement and reconciliation in order to move forward, except ours. We left it behind as an institutional form, And I think it's worth considering whether it's something we should have held on to somewhat more thoughtfully. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not proposing that we return to the roles of intermediary status. I have no need to hear confession or necessarily to somehow find forgiveness for you, nor that we reintegrate a general confession into our worship practice. But I am suggesting that taking the time to own up to our mistakes, small mistakes or large mistakes, is an act of humility that reminds us in a healthy way of our common imperfection. And it allows us to hold ourselves accountable for our actions in order to be at peace in our lives. In order that, as Kenneth Patton suggests, there be no end to the open employment of our loving. At various points in our history, Unitarians and Universalists made some choices about traditional aspects of belief. So, with apologies to Robert Frost, the roads diverged in the theological woods, and determined not to travel both and be a confused traveler, quickly we switched from where we had stood to where we found truth in the undergrowth, then took the path we knew more fair and doubtless having the better claim because it was welcoming and wanted where that humans are born in love, not sin. We have chosen a path that holds up love, not judgment. Augustine of Hippo, so many, many years ago, convinced our forebears that the sins of Adam and Eve's choice to eat the fruit against God's wishes left each of us tainted. Augustine argued, if not for original sin, why would God have sent Christ to carry our collective burden? Baptism cleansed the flaw. But our tradition objected to the thesis itself and insisted that a loving God would not, could not create new life bearing the burden of an ancient myth. So we are born in love, and that is good. But wait, we make mistakes. We are flawed. We are imperfect. How and where do we manage those two competing realities? When do we Unitarian Universalists make the time to accept our own fallibility, to create space for thoughtful remorse, to encourage apology and allow forgiveness, not to mention making amends? How and where do we teach our children the value to their very hearts and souls of an apology, of accountability, let alone forgiveness? When we, as a tradition, gave ourselves permission to reject or reframe our theological constructs, when we moved from the belief house of our past to a new and non-creedal home, we left this practice behind, and I think we are missing it for ourselves and for our children. One wonders how its absence might be impacting us. So let us use, as we have sung about today, as an example, our planet. On the cusp of seasonal change from summer to fall, thousands of people are gathering in New York City today, right now, to demand that our leaders pay more attention to our environmental crisis. I very much hope that something good comes out of this effort, and I'm so pleased that members of Theodore Parker Church are there to bear witness to the passion and concern that so many of us feel about the state of our earth. It is a call, this gathering in New York, to our leaders from many countries to determine some collective action that will address the issue of climate change. But don't we each carry some individual responsibility for this problem as well? Aren't we each the ones who drop our bones because we see the one we want instead? The better bone, the bigger bone, the newer bone? Isn't our individual desire for more and better and different, perhaps sometimes only for the sake of different, a driving force behind this crisis? I suspect I am at the front of that line. I drive a really cool car, a 2008 Green Car of the Year car. It's excellent, and I can feel self-righteous about our choice. And I'm reminded of what a totally hip and groovy, fuel-efficient car I drive when I notice I can now park in the new fuel-efficient car spaces at the Chestnut Hill Mall when I go shopping. And isn't that the burden I'm passing on to my planet? When exactly is my faith tradition requiring me to hold myself accountable, except as I might find it expedient or convenient? I don't mean that this should be about calling ourselves to a place of guilt, but to a place of awareness and to a place of intention to do better. I read a great quote the other day. There are 7 days in the week, and someday isn't one of them. When does my individual practice or reckoning fit into this tradition we love? When is it required of me? I wonder if any of you remember the musical Godspell? Very fun. 70s, I think, right? There's a beautiful song called On the Willows that is a retelling of Psalm 137. In the psalm, the temple has been destroyed, and the Israelites have been scattered into exile. On the willows there we hung up our lyres, for our captors there required of us songs and our tormentors mirth. Remember, sing us one of the songs of Zion. But how can we sing? How can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land, they asked. The Israelites were so displaced by their exile and by not having their temple to worship in that they stopped singing. And in fact, as a tradition, during and for many years after this exilic period, Jews did not sing in worship in deference to this experience. How many years? I don't know, hundreds, perhaps thousands. Eventually, however, music made its way back into Jewish worship because I think it is such a primal expression of emotional life. How can we not sing? So I wonder, following this example, if it's possible for apology and forgiveness to find their way back into our practice and our worship. Not as bludgeons for making us feel badly or chalking up our mistakes, but as opportunities to take stock, to reconcile our truths within ourselves, and to be able to move forward hopefully and lovingly and constructively. From yet another tradition, there's a Buddhist story I often tell about two monks walking down the river together. Have I told it to you yet? I hope not. So two monks, one younger, walking down the river path. They see a woman calling for help on the opposite side of the river in a turbulent section. And knowing that as monks they are not supposed to touch women, still the elder crosses the river, picks the woman up, and carries her across to safety. And as they continue on their journey, the younger monk becomes ever more agitated and eventually can't stand it anymore. "Why did you do that?" he asks. "You broke all the rules." And the elder calmly replies, "I put her down miles back. Why are you still carrying her?" Now, often that story carries the wisdom of the elder monk who was able to let go of his transgression quickly. He made a choice, he acted on it, he put it down. He was practicing detachment, which is very Buddhist. But let's focus here for a minute on the young monk's need to wrestle with the event. It took him a mile or more of agitating over something that really bothered him before he even was able to say something. I wonder if any of you can relate to that. Sometimes we might observe someone doing something, perhaps someone we live with, maybe. Perhaps they do something we find objectionable. But we hold on to it for a while, and we come up with all kinds of internal stories about how or why anyone would do something so ridiculous. In my house, it's squeezing out the sponge. Like, why not? How can you forget that? And then at some point, we are filled to bursting like our young monk. And we have to challenge the action or event, only to find actually we feel rather silly. Perhaps an apology for our judging is in order. I wrote to my colleague, Rob Eller Isaacs, who wrote our meditation this morning, about the text for the meditation you heard earlier. He told me he wrote it 30 years ago to use as an annual ritual at Yom Kippur. He originally wrote it in the first person. I forgive myself. I forgive you. We begin again in love. The hymnal commission must have considered it too intimate, he said. They recast it in the third person, but at Unity, where Rob is co-minister, they use the original form. People either choose a partner or recite it alone responsively. As we begin our time together, learning about each other and what we want to commit to for the future of this congregation, I am hoping that we can determine a place in our common life for a regular taking stock, for a time of individual and collective assessment, of apology when warranted, of forgiveness and amends for self and others as useful. It is a sort of cleansing, a practice of reconciling that we have denied ourselves for too long, I think. It is a practice that would encourage us to hold the beautiful bone of our present without chasing after the illusion of some imagined need. Like music, apology and forgiveness are primal expressions of healthy emotional life. So today, for all the judging and desires that blur the vision of what is already good, loving, and whole, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. So may it be. And amen.